You know, it takes a lot of energy to live in this world. With all of our softness and all of our love and all of our peace, we need to know that it takes a certain amount of strength to be peaceful in the world. And that pacifists are not passive. And so I was thinking about what I would talk to you about today. And I guess I've reverted to my African roots because here's my Dhamma talk. That's what we call it, sermon, Dhamma talk. And it's in Neo-Hieroglyphics. So we'll see how this turns out. No. But I was just thinking about how complicated life is. And we see something one way, and we think that this is the way it is. But in truth, it may be this way, but not only this way. And so our difficulty comes when we're trying to understand something in one way only. Everything has to be black and white. It's hot or cold. It's in or out. It's up or down. You know, but we've learned that nothing is exactly one way. And if we take things as one way, we become narrow, constricted. We become staid. We become locked down, tamped down, pressed down, oppressed, and we oppress. And so this is what is happening in the world. The more we know, the more we know. But the more we know, the more we should recognize there is to be known. And so the Buddha taught us to say, this I know, this I know, this is true. But never to say, and this only is true. So that's where we get into trouble. It's okay to know something. It's okay to advocate for what you know. It's okay to do what you know to do. But this is not the only way it can be done. You know, it's not the only way that something can be related to. It's not the only way something can be understood. It's not the only way something can be worked out. And so the reason we come into such conflict is because it needs to be my way or the highway. And so if we would watch how children do, I love these spiritual traditions. Say, except you be as a little child, you shall not enter into the kingdom. Life, joy, and peace in one spirit. This unification of mind. And you see kids and they come together and they are each so self-opinionated. They have a way of doing something and they get together and they squabble. But in a few minutes, forget about it, you know. And they just move on and they do something else together in harmony. Now the parents might still be squabbling, defending each child's right to be right. But the kids, they forgot all about it. You know, they just move on to the next thing. Matter of fact, the toy I wouldn't let you play with a minute ago, I go, here. You know, because I want to play with your toy. And so if we watch them and observe, we could see some kind of freedom, some kind of liberty that we could step back into as grown-ups, as adults. We find a certain freedom that we could enjoy. We have our things, you know. We have our wisdoms. We have our sciences. But I always say, let truth inform your science, not science informing your truth. Because, I mean, our science changes. I remember one time they told us that the earth was flat. You go too far and you fall off the end. It turned out not to exactly be correct. It said, you know, east is east and west is west and never the twain shall meet. But we find out, certainly in this global space it, if you go east, you end up west. And so we're learning that we can never say something is absolutely concretely this, forever this, and only this. If we could just practice that one thing, we could have peace on earth. There's a practice that we do in the Buddha Dharma. It's called bearing witness. Coming into a situation not knowing what to expect. Not coming prepared for the situation, but coming vulnerable, coming willing to be a participant in the process of whatever is unfolding. And it's a great way to be, but it's a scary way to be. Great, scary, that's the paradox. It's a paradox. And so we come in not knowing, not thinking, I have the answer. I've got the ticket. I can show you the way. But we come not knowing. We come take a looky-see, a looky-feel. And if we're willing to do that, if we haven't already put up a barrier that separates me from you, then I can see you, truly see you. I can feel you. I can know you. And this is a practice of dropping that barrier and being willing to just be there, to just show up. But the second part of that is bearing witness to what is there. What is there? If we come full of our ideas of what is there, then we create what's in our head. Mind is chief. Mind made are we. Whatever we think and ponder on, that's the inclination of the mind. That's what we produce out here. That's what we put out here. And so we look at a world that we, each one of us, but all together, have created. So whose fault is that? You know, what is my part in it? What is my complicity? What was my commission? What was my omission? And so we come not knowing, but bearing witness. And out of that space comes the compassionate wisdom. It's a fruit. It's not anything that we actually can hands-on create. It is like it's the result of something. There are other things that we have to do. And if we do these things aright, then the fruit is a compassionate wisdom. And it can be a soul different. This morning I was talking about Abhya, fearlessness, overcoming fear, going to the places that scare you, and how there you find your liberty, you find your freedom. And when you get free, you free others around you, even ones who didn't know they were bound. And then sometimes you find freedom when you didn't know that you were bound. This is the way it is. This is the way it's always been. This is the way we do it. We come with that notion that leaves no room for anything else. Black is black, white is white. In is in and out is out. Up is up and down is down. But life throws us a curveball because everything is relative and nothing is absolute. This relativity is what creates the paradox for us. And if we look at anything, if we really looked at anything, nothing is what it seems to be. Nothing is what we've named it. You say, I am Panyawati. That's my name. Don't wear it out. I just had to say that. I'm sorry. I work with kids a lot. But I am Panyawati. But exactly what's Panyawati? Is it my body? Is it my form? You know, is it my feeling? You know, is it how I think? You know, is it my perception? I mean, what part of that makes me me? And if you took away any one of those, would I be the same person? No, I would not. So if we dissected me into form and feeling and perception and consciousness and thoughts, mind, objects, where would Panyawati be? She cannot be found. But if I take my car and I take it apart and it becomes a chassis and wheels and a motor and a battery and car seats and window and windshield wipers, but where's car? Does not exist. It's a fabricated phenomenon. We've organized these things in a certain way and we've labeled it this. And so we go through life labeling everything. And before you know, we have everything all figured out, and yet nothing is figured out. And we find that out, and we hit a midlife crisis because we can't figure out what the hell is going on. What went wrong? We just don't know what to do about this mess we put together. And so one good way to start is at the apex of the paradox. Nothing is as it seems, yet everything is as it is. That requires a looseness. It requires a yielding. It requires a deep trusting. It also requires a willingness to suffer loss. You know, we like praise, but we don't like blame. You know, we don't like loss, but we like gain. We like fame, but we can't tolerate shame. We like pleasure, but don't want to have any pain. But these are all the eight worldly winds. These are the eight winds that we encompass in this life. So everything has both of these sides. In every bit of pleasure, there is the coming pain, the loss, the separation. When we win, somebody loses. When I win, somebody loses. But when I lose, somebody gains. You know, these past couple of years have been tough. They've been tough on a lot of people. And some people couldn't take it. Some go up to a tall building and jump off. Others just had nervous breakdown. And it hit our area. We're in Appalachia. Appalachia's already poor. I mean, it's really poor. The only beautiful spots there are the places that belong to the snowbirds. That's the rich folks in Florida who move up there. And I've never seen anything like this. I came from a different part of the country, and I wound up here. I don't know, maybe just riding the paradox, because that's another story. I had somebody in the morning service, they'll tell you that story. And so here I am in this place. And people are saying, well, how can you take it? How can we get through this time? You know? I can't get through this time. I don't know what to do. And I said, you know, you have to change your view of what is happening. You have to change your view of how it is happening. You have to change your view of what brings you peace and acceptance and joy. That's an inner thing. That's something that we have to do. Nobody can do that for us out here. It's something that we have to do for ourselves. We have to be a lamp unto our own feet and a light unto our own path. If I say to myself, I shall put on a happy face, then shall my countenance be changed. Now, this is to be something that comes up from the inside. And that's why we can rely on our great spiritual teachers, because they give us these pithy sayings. That's not my own saying. It was a real good one, though. But, you know, because then we can mumble these things to ourselves and see, that makes so much more sense to me than my constantly reviewing my suffering. And so I said to them, well, you know, before this time, before I became a monk, I was in real estate and mortgages, so I know a little bit about those fields. That's where I made my money all my life. And I was always winning. Always winning. Always winning. I knew the cycles. I knew when real estate was going to recalibrate. You know, and when the RTC was here, I made all the boom time for me, or for other people's misery. And my rationale was, if I didn't buy it, somebody was going to buy it, and that's true. But the bottom line is I profited. And when that was gone, I got into buying charged off Visa and MasterCard accounts. You didn't know bank sells your cards after a while, you know, to get the ink off their books. And they can only sell it for pennies on the dollar, the administrative cost. So I could buy a $5,000 card for like $100. I write you a letter and I say, our company has taken over this debt. You owe $5,000. You owe another $4,000 in late fees for the past 3 years. But have I got a deal for you? you just send me $1,000 today, and I'll wipe out the other $8,000, and I'll put it on your credit report, paid as agreed. Oh, they'd send me that $1,000, and they'd send this letter, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. But I paid hardly nothing for the account. But that's business. That's the way things work, you know? And I enjoyed it fully. But now, this time, I was the one who had something. And I was the one who was losing. And someone else was profiting off of my loss, and someone else was gaining. And they said, Panyawati, how can you take it? I said, it's very easy, you know? Because I do a practice of accepting loss as equally as I accept gain. And I take on a practice of rejoicing in the benefits that others receive, because I consider others as oneself. So when we look at things this way, what would hurt, what could kill, doesn't. There's an easiness, a flow. There's we can ride a tide, we can bend like a palm instead of being uprooted like an oak. We learn something in our good times. We learn to appreciate what we have, but in our bad times, we also learn. And maybe we learn even more. Somebody said to me one time, you know, I want to just use my common sense. But you know, I have all the common stuff I want. I want extraordinary sensibility. And the only way to have that is to consider that I am not alone in this world. And so even when I as one fall short, I can look at how many others there are, and I can rejoice in the group collect, and it changes how I view even what's happening in my life today. I am one of you when you're doing good, and you I see as one of me when I'm doing good. So changing our mind in this way helps make our world pliable. Not just tolerable. You know, we talk about tolerating, but way beyond tolerating. You know, it makes it invigorating. It gives a purpose to everything that we do. And there's one last thing I wanted to share with you. It says that we should not ask why this is. No need to ask even what this is. But ask how. How is it? And when we start to look at how something is, our wisdom arises and we see how we contribute, how we help, how we make it better, and how we find our joy even in the midst of sorrow. Praise and blame, loss and gain, pleasure and pain, fame and shame. These all come together like a rose with thorns. No way to have one without the other. But if we equally accept one as the other, then we have peace, and we have generosity, and we have virtue, and we have renunciation, and we have all of these things that make us human beings. And then everything gets done, nothing goes undone, and yet there is no doer, there is just peace.